Please stand by. Thank you for standing by, everyone, and for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, Using WebSphere to Achieve an SLA for Reuse and Service Generation on the Mainframe. This conference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn how WebSphere Application Server and other IBM tools work with System Z to deliver a secure and reliable base for a service-oriented architecture. The speaker for today's conference is Andrea Grego, New Business Workloads for System Z. Now at this time, I'd like to hand it over to our speaker, Andrea. Andrea, please go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Andrea Grego. I am the Worldwide Market Manager for WebSphere on System Z deployments. Today we're going to be talking about how to use WebSphere to achieve a service-oriented architecture centered around reuse and service generation for mainframe deployments. You can go to the next slide. This is just a very basic slide on what a service-oriented architecture is. Services are repeatable business tasks. Business processes are a series of services that are snapped together like building blocks. I like to think of them as Legos. You can kind of break them apart and make something new every time. SOA is really just an architectural style that enables you to loosely connect services. Okay, so the following slide. Now, I would assume that most of you are familiar with service-oriented architecture and you know all about SOA, so that slide probably wasn't even necessary. But slide number three is a survey that was conducted, or a study that was conducted by Aberdeen Research Group. And the gist of it is that the SOA market is beginning to mature and implementations are now occurring. So SOA is real for a great deal of our customers, and it's no longer something that would be nice to have or is a visionary approach to things. It's, in fact, a reality in a lot of shops. Customers look to SOA to solve a wide variety of problems. And what Aberdeen found when they conducted their studies, they conducted actually a series of four studies across more than 600 customers, all of them at different stages in their SOA adoption. And basically, the overall population told them that management of IT complexity and speeding IT implementations are the most important drivers behind their adoption of SOA. And this makes sense, right? This impacts your bottom line. How many people you need to throw at a problem, right? How many people you need to have available administering your IT infrastructure actually impacts how productive your business really is. So that makes a lot of sense. So simplification is also a really important driver. Technical simplification is a really important driver for many customers. Some customers are still at a stage where they just need to be able to reuse the existing assets that they already have. We walk away with really four kind of key application areas or four key things that are critical to an SOA from this study. The first one is being able to manage your IT complexity. The second one is how quickly you can deploy IT implementations, so how quickly you can make changes and how quickly, you know, you can adapt to what's going on in the market. So flexibility is really a key theme there. The third one is being able to simplify while still taking advantage of your existing investments. And the last one is really being able to reuse those existing investments. And so we'll focus primarily in this presentation on the value of reuse. And entering an SOA via the reuse entry point is a critical achievement using SOA. So the next slide. Your business flexibility is really critically tied into the ability of your IT to be flexible and to be agile. So what we find is that your application infrastructure, that key middleware where WebSphere is a real dominant player, is a fundamental and critical asset to your SOA, as it really does provide the cornerstone or the basic technological foundation that your SOA depends on. Another part of this, another key part of this, and something we'll talk about in this presentation, is that, okay, middleware is middleware, and for the most part, no matter where you deploy your middleware, you'll see some real value from it. So what happens when that platform discussion comes up? And that's one of those things that we'll touch on in here, is that in fact, your middleware is very valuable no matter where you deploy it, but where you deploy it, in fact, has a whole sense of value of its own that actually is something that feeds the value of that middleware and feeds the value of those applications that are driving your business that are, in fact, being leveraged by your middleware. So what we'll focus on is how you can meet your business objectives, how you can leverage your existing assets and all the existing investment that you put in, because, you know, it can be quite significant in some cases, how this ties back into a broader SOA appeal, and how you can work with IBM, right, to, in fact, meet all of those needs. So we'll go on then to the next slide, and this is something most of you are probably familiar with, and this is the SOA life cycle. The SOA life cycle is built on these four unique life cycles, built upon a whole series of governance and best practices. But it starts with modeling, and modeling is really how you gather the requirements for your existing SOA project or whatever it is you're trying to do, how you gather those requirements, how you understand that environment, how you architect and design what you're going to implement. So it's really an information stage, right? It's about understanding what you're about to do. The next stage is assembling, and assembling is when you take all that knowledge that you imparted and gained and all the planning that you pulled together in the first stage, then you actually start to build, right? You actually start to construct services. You actually start to construct those unique piece parts that are going to go into your SOA project. The third stage is deployment. Where you deploy depends on any number of things, including what are you exactly trying to do. So you may be focused on integrating people or collaborating your human resources, or you may be focused on process management, right? Taking that existing application layer and abstracting it so that you have unique process flows through all of your applications. So it kind of brings those applications together and delivers some new value. Or you could just be really building an application infrastructure, right? Your primary deployment objective could be just to improve or web-enable your existing assets. You can have kind of a multi-layered approach to how you deploy, depending on what your end business needs are. And then the last one is management. So once you've gone through that cycle, right, you've modeled, you've assembled, you've deployed, you're now at the stage where you're going to manage. So it's how do I keep this alive and vibrant and healthy, right? How do I ensure that my applications are running the way they're supposed to? How do I ensure that I haven't hit any bottlenecks? How do I ensure that, you know, I'm actually getting business value out of this? Those are all things that you do from a management perspective. And as I mentioned earlier, the underlying piece of that is governance, and governance is driven by best practices. So having folks that have been there before you, that have had success, is a real critical factor. And understanding what's going on in the market and what people are doing to make their technology flexible and alive and agile is a critical success factor. So if you go on to the next slide, we have an entry point that we'll focus on, and I'll explain that in the following slide. But the entry point that we're going to focus on is reuse and service generation. And you can see, looking at this same life cycle that we mentioned earlier, this SOA life cycle in the previous slide, here's some products that actually match back into that. So when you're modeling, you're looking at things like understanding your assets via, you know, WebSphere Studio Asset Analyzer, or modeling those future business processes, right? How do I model my business flows? You move on to the next stage, which is where you start to assemble. You can, depending on your needs, you can use a whole suite from Rational in the application realm, or you may be building legacy applications, so you need to have that conversion from COBOL type of applications. So you might be doing Java and COBOL and PL1, and, you know, in that case, WebSphere Developer for System Z gives you what you need because it provides you that ability to program outside of the Java realm and really deal with what some people would call legacy assets, but I'm sure a whole other set of them would call them core assets, given that there are 200 billion lines of COBOL code out there that are really running businesses that are, to this day, fundamental aspects and critical, unique contributors to your business. Okay, so then, you know, when we move over into the deployment realm, you start looking at products like WebSphere Application Server, right? Hosting your applications in the application server. Portal, which is really bringing together those applications and integrating them from a people-focused perspective. Or Process Server, which is a product that abstracts, so to speak, above the application layer. It abstracts into unique driven processes that flow through the applications and tie them together as needed. Or you could look at any one of those core assets. We just mentioned core assets and COBOL and PL1, you know, being really core programming languages behind those core assets. So in this case, we'll look at things like Kix or IMS or TPS. And we'll talk about all of these later in the product. Then the last stage is management, which is really dominated by our Tivoli brand. A lot of management, performance-type tooling, metrics and monitoring. We'll talk all about that. So now let's go on to the next slide. And here we're looking at our SOA entry points. And we have five unique SOA entry points that we developed in collaboration with Mercer Management Consulting. And three of them are business-driven. So we have three business-focused entry points into SOA, and those are people, processes, and information. Then we have two IT-centric entry points into SOA, and those are connectivity and reuse. And connectivity obviously alludes to making sure your IT infrastructure is integrated, right? Making sure that everything is able to talk to everything else and do it cleanly and effectively. And reuse, which is what we're really going to focus on, for this presentation is really about I've already got an existing investment, right? I've already spent, you know, I'm not a brand new company. Most of us don't have the benefits of saying, hey, I started last year. So I'm just building up all brand new assets. And, you know, and it's easy for me to embrace open standards because I've only been in business for a year. Most companies have a history, and most companies have tons of existing data, terabytes of data that they need to leverage. And that data might be in any number of forms. It might be, you know, CB2 data. It might be, you know, in VSAM. It could be in Oracle. It could be any type of information that their existing Kix and COBOL and IMS, these applications that have been driving their business for years and years and years are, you know, fundamental assets, right? They are critical assets. And reusing them is critical to the future success of the business. So we're really going to focus on what is reuse and how can Webster help you to reuse those assets. Okay, so the next slide is a snapshot, and this should look a little bit like our previous slide, right? We focus on the entry point. So if you take that entry point slide and you kind of map it on here, this is our SOA reference architecture. A bunch of this is grayed out because primarily what we're focusing on is the reuse sector, which is driven primarily by business services, right, our applications and our infrastructure services, which is things like virtualization. And this, the infrastructure services in particular can be done via software. You can take a very software-driven focus on this. But in our case, since we're talking about System Z, there's really a strong applicability here for the critical services that are driven through the actual platform. So there's a virtualization at a platform level, right? There's workload management via ZOS that's done at a, you know, at a platform level, at an operating system level. And it's integral, right, to the success of System Z in the corporate world. At any rate, so this SOA reference architecture is really, while it was developed primarily by IBM, it is something that most companies and most service providers or software providers are looking to and saying, all right, yep, this makes sense. So what you see here is really a big, broad view of SOA and all the potential, you know, SOA kind of driven projects and motives can all be mapped back to this. And we are going to focus on the part that's highlighted. That's really our primary focus for reuse. Okay, so we'll proceed on to the next slide. So let's look a little bit about reuse and how that impacts our portfolio, right? What we've learned from customers and what we've done as a result of that. So we found, obviously, a great deal of our IBM customers have mainframes and come from mainframe backgrounds. And a lot more don't, right? But a lot of them do, and a lot of them said, reuse is critical to me. Reuse can make or break my business, right? I've already got such strong investments that to lose those investments at this point or to re-architect, you know, we've heard a lot of people say, well, I've got, you know, PL1 assets, therefore I need to re-architect my whole solution. It's insanity. It could break your business. You know, I mentioned earlier there were 200 billion lines of COBOL code that are out there. There's an estimate to replace that, to replace those existing COBOL programs would cost approximately over $20 trillion. So in a lot of cases, you know, there is not an option to replace. And even if there were, the cost is so great that it just makes no sense. Okay, so we mentioned earlier some of these products, the Rational Tools and the Webster Studio Asset Analyzer, right? We've mentioned a lot of these, and you can see how they're really driven, right? We've got a productivity focus from development, right, from discovery of assets to development, which really embraces our tooling. And then there's the idea of transaction engines, of which a WebSphere application server is certainly a transaction engine in the same way that Kix is, with different values, right? Definitely with different values. But in the same light, they do predominantly the same thing, and they just bring different assets to the table to do it. And something new, and that we'll touch on a little bit, is the Webster Service Registry and Repository. You know, we're finding SOA is, in fact, real, as we mentioned earlier, and customers are implementing SOAs today, right? That is a dominant business driver, is to make this not a vision, but in fact a reality. And the Webster Service Registry and Repository is a key part of the governance necessary to make this actually happen. So, okay, great. Let's move on to the next slide. So what you really find is you benefit, right, entering SOA via, you know, reusing your existing assets. There are some benefits to that, right? There's this idea that you can flex your existing assets, of which, the, you know, System Z has been estimated to have over $5 trillion in core assets. $5 trillion. That's a huge amount of money in existing assets. And again, we mentioned the replacement cost to those existing assets. If you were to say, I want to re-architect in Java, straight up and just rebuild everything, that's over $20 trillion. So we're talking, how do we leverage this $5 trillion? And in a lot of cases, we have a history that stretches back decades for some customers and longer for others. And to date, the qualities that you get from System Z cannot be replicated, not on the same level. We say with SOA, you can do it anywhere, and you can, and that's a very true statement. SOA can be done anywhere on any platform, but that doesn't mean that there aren't advantages to doing it on one platform versus another. These are some of the things we're going to talk about. You know, and you start with, when you reuse, you start with just knowing what you have, right? That's a critical factor. You just have to begin with, what do I have today? And you go all the way up into, and now how do I manage this SOA? So it goes from discovery all the way to implementation. And IBM has products and value to take you there. So let's go on to the next slide. So this is a customer example. Bank of Montreal is a very well-known banking firm. They have assets of over $256 billion, and they employ more than 34,000 people in Canada. And BMO, Bank of Montreal, has diversified activities, right, concentrating primarily in retail banking, wealth management, and investment banking. So those are their primary banking businesses. And they found themselves in an interesting position, right? BMO had existing mainframe investments that were critical to their business. It was one of those situations where, you know, we like to throw out the 80-20 rule. Approximately 80% of the productive transactions coming into the bank were still founded on the mainframe, right? Still founded primarily on the mainframe, and yet the mainframe was accounting for approximately 20% of their existing investments. So they found themselves in an interesting situation. They had a need to update an existing teller system, a legacy teller system, because it was actually creating disparate, siloed business processes. And so to replace their legacy teller system, BMO selected a solution from IBM that provided the mission-critical high-volume financial transaction application for more than 10,000 tellers and staff. What they found after they developed this application is that they had a choice on where they could deploy it. And so they ran extreme cost analyses. And after they conducted this cost analysis, what they found was, and they focused on a couple of different platforms. System Z was one of them. They focused on Intel, and they focused on Unix. And after they weighed the cost of running in each of these environments, they decided that System Z was, in fact, the best platform for them to deploy on. And so they were able to use WebSphere Application Server for ZOS to integrate into their back-end Kix applications, which, again, remember that 80-20 rule, right? Strong investments on the mainframe still tend to dominate with 80% of the productive transactions coming through most corporations with mainframe assets. And so they focused on integrating WebSphere Application Server for ZOS into their existing and Kix applications. And this was able to provide them something that was both highly available, right? I mean, it was one of the strongest things about Z is that it's a highly available solution. But at the same time, they were also able to scale as needed so that unpredictable growth volumes and just, hey, today we expect 5,000 users, tomorrow that could be 50,000 users, is not something they felt that they had to worry about by deploying on System Z. So they got that availability and scale that they needed. And with this new teller application, or this new teller system, BMO has a common set of web services for more than 300 types of financial transaction processes. And they can reuse those across multiple channels. So their SOA, right, the SOA that BMO built actually eliminates duplication and drives consistency for their banking line of business products. And in addition to that, right, while they had conducted their cost study, found that System Z was, in fact, where they needed to deploy from a cost perspective, they then added Z-Series Application Assist processors to this solution, also commonly known as ZAPs. And upon enabling them, and ZAPs, just to give you guys a snapshot of what a ZAP is, in fact, an engine, much like a general processor. But it's a specialized engine, and it's designed to do Java workloads on the mainframe. So it essentially creates an offload of the existing Java work so that the bank is actually able to, just running normally as usual, they turn on their ZAP engines, and all of that Java work that would normally be running on a general processor is then eligible to be run on a ZAP. And so they found that upon enabling these ZAPs, just turning them on, 60% of their Java workloads were instantly offloaded to these ZAP engines. And the ZAP engines, you know, they're not charged the same way as the general engines. A general CP in System Z is chargeable, right? You run MIPS on it, you pay for those MIPS. Well, once you pay for a ZAP, it's a one-time charge. You pay once for the engine, and then you can offload as much as you want onto them. And they're upgradable from machine to machine. So Bank of Montreal experienced 60% offload rates, and those cost savings were then consolidated because they don't have to pay for the MIPS that are being run on there. Okay. So now we'll go on to the next slide. What we've done is we focus on the SOA entry point. We've kind of introduced what that entry point's all about. We focus on a customer case of building an SOA around reuse, right? I mean, that was critical to Bank of Montreal with their existing assets. Now we're going to talk a little bit about some of the products that are key players in building an SOA on the mainframe. So the first one we're going to talk about is, what's your Studio Asset Analyzer? We talked a little bit about this when we mentioned the life cycle. And what's your Studio Asset Analyzer is a critical player for a lot of folks in building their SOA. You know, older applications tend to really lack documentation. And if there is documentation, it's often dated and it exists in someone's head that may possibly have retired or moved on to a new position or is no longer with the company. And, you know, it becomes difficult to have a good understanding of the critical nature of your older applications or even some of your newer applications. So WSAA actually creates a search and analysis effort, so to speak, and it identifies, its sole purpose is to go through and identify all the reusable components and to document them so that you have a good understanding of what exists in your environment and how you can reuse it. So WSAA actually helps developers, analysts, and operations staff overcome some of the hurdles of not knowing what's out there by providing a tool to actually rapidly understand enterprise-level applications and to determine how they can best be reused. It also does mixed workload, so it does traditional type of applications, you know, KIX applications, and also J3E applications. So it's able to do this across platforms as well. So it, you know, recognizes that not everything is consolidated on System Z, and that, in fact, there are things on Windows and IBM AIX systems, and it's able to look across those things. And it does it using a web browser. So it's just a, you know, a nice, easy interface to visualize and build application dependencies, logic and data flows. So it basically does a full-on analysis and then provides you with documentation of that. So it's like a blueprint to your existing infrastructure. So the next slide then talks about, okay, so now we've modeled, right, so to speak, from a lifecycle perspective, we've modeled. Now we're going to look at how do we assemble. We know now what's out there. We see what we need to use. And now we're able to come in with WD for Z, or WebSphere Developer for System Z. And using an Eclipse-based environment, which is built on top of Rational Application Developer. So for those Java programmers that use Rational or RAD, you know, they're able to easily come in and say, I understand this because this is much like it, except for the primary difference being, right, instead of just focusing on Java, this does COBOL. This does TSO type of environments, you know, batch work. It's able to build stored procedures for DB2. So what you find is you're actually able to develop a much broader perspective with less errors because a lot of this stuff is really automated and built in. So there's an understanding that not all of your legacy, you know, or your core application programmers are still really around. So you don't have to have that strong level of COBOL and PL1 that, you know, previous generations might have had and still get the job done. So this is able to do cross-language type of development activities rapidly and easily. Okay, so the next slide then is KIX, right? This is going to go through kind of a series of the next couple of slides of what are our core environments exist of, right? These are the core, these are the 80-20 rule type of things, right? This is KIX has been running in your environment for 20 years, and, you know, the applications you deployed still have value. So how do you enhance that value, right? KIX today supports web services. Actually, and I have here it's version 3.1, but it actually goes back, I believe, to version 2, where the initial web service implementation began to exist, as well as Java support. Well, now, you know, KIX actually provides some integration with newer products like Process Server, newer products like Application Server, and with this new WebSphere Service Registry and Repository, which I mentioned earlier is really going to be a fundamental product in terms of underlying the governance for your infrastructure, KIX provides a support pack there to actually streamline that process. So KIX is open to, you know, open standards. It's open to other core products in your environment that you might be using, like in terms of Application Server, Process Server, WSRR, to extend the value of that existing asset. So KIX is ripe for SOA. Next slide, IMS. IMS is another product that strong, you know, strong banking, a lot of IMS in the banking industries. And in a lot of cases, these are, you know, 80-20 rule, right? These are strong applications driving in IMS data as well, right? I mean, it's not just IMS applications or transactions. It's, in fact, also IMS data that is really valuable and relevant for today's business. So IMS embraces web services, open standards, right? IMS has put out an IMS SOAP gateway to enable easy access to IMS. You can download that. KICS and IMS, the main point of this is really KICS, IMS, and TPF, which we'll talk about in a second, are really modern players in an SOA. IBM has invested heavily in ensuring that your existing assets are, in fact, able to be reused and are, in fact, able to be leveraged in your new SOA project. So the IMS gateway, the SOAP gateway, is actually freely downloadable. There's a URL right there, www.ibm.com/IMS. From there, you'll be able to access it. They also had a beta program that GA'd closed in July for this. So by exposing these billions of dollars of IMS and KICS services, customers can integrate them rapidly and easily into their new infrastructures. Okay, so let's move on to the next slide, which is TPF. And TPF, there's a picture of a plane here because TPF is commonly known as, you know, the airline industry's solution, right? TPF is interesting because it's really designed for real-time transaction processing. And the assumption, right, as always with real-time transaction processing, is that it must always be up. So, I mean, we have shops that have, you know, TPF that have 100% availability requirements, right? It cannot go down. If it goes down, your business goes down. And so planned outages are even really painful for a lot of these environments. In this case, right, TPF is much like KICS, much like IMS, SOAP-enabled, right? It's open. It's supporting things like XML, WSDL. So it's open. It's ready to be part of your SOA. The value, or a huge part of the value of the reuse factor, is those characteristics, those core characteristics of your KICS applications, of your IMS transactions, of your TPF transactions, is that the characteristics of them go with them into the new application. So you take with it all that reliability. You know, when you open up these services and you recreate them into new and interesting business propositions, you take with it all of those characteristics that make it a core asset that's running your business. Okay, next slide is application server. So application server, particularly the application server for ZOS, has some strong market acceptance, very strong. I have a slide later on that will talk about that. And it is a critical part for many customers of their SOA and, in fact, provides a lot of the foundational principles, right, the full web services stack that's then shared, right? I mean, WebSphere Application Server essentially is a core foundational product of a whole bunch of our other WebSphere products and has a whole bunch of your infrastructure needs, right, are met by WebSphere Application Server. So we mentioned earlier, you know, the strong web services stack. And so, and its ability to, you know, the JMS engine, its ability to communicate with itself and other open standard-based environments. So a couple of really interesting things coming out in the application server space. The first one is 64-bit support for ZOS. You know, we used to have in WebSphere for ZOS, there used to be a 1-gig heap restriction. That heap restriction now goes away. So applications can be larger. Your scalability, right, I mean, one of the beautiful things about the application server on ZOS is its unique ability to scale in vertical scaling, right? So it builds upon itself as opposed to horizontal scaling. I need to add more boxes. So this is, you know, a very virtual scaling environment, and 64-bit enables that scale as well to be broader. Another really kind of critical factor coming out is the Apache server, the HTTP server, built upon Apache for ZOS. So we will now actually have the industry-leading web server is going to be available on ZOS, and it's the same server. So, you know, it eliminates some of that unique. In prior years, you know, we had some unique IBM HTTP server needs. Those unique needs actually go away now, at least from this perspective. And WebSphere, you know, a big part of the value of WebSphere, particularly on ZOS, is its ability to integrate into the existing infrastructure. ZOS is, you know, SystemZ in particular, but ZOS especially, is an integration platform, and it's designed to integrate, right? I mean, you might have virtual machines. You might have thousands of virtual machines, but the reality of it is you really have one machine, and it's working together and integrating an enterprise. Watch for ZOS, by exploiting the operating system, is able to take advantage of things that the application server on other platforms is unable to do. Things like, you know, advanced availability. I mean, we're talking 5 nines of availability, which means quite a bit. I think it's like less than 8 minutes of downtime a year. And that can be planned. And so for some businesses, that, you know, is a minimum, right? And so you also have things like we mentioned earlier, the scalability, right? Vertical scaling is a very unique feature of WebSphere Application Server on ZOS. Its ability to integrate back into some critical things like RACF security, right? Its support for RACF and Top Secret and ACF2. And, you know, mainframe security is becoming a critical success factor for a lot of businesses because that's where their data exists. And anytime you move, even when you're transacting off-platform in a secure environment, you're still taking that data that's resided and been secure on your mainframe, you know, on a vault, so to speak, you're opening it up, and it becomes vulnerable. And so ensuring that the work stays on the platform and is locked down with RACF becomes a critical factor. And then there's always the unprecedented ZOS workload manager. The ability to differentiate and prioritize workloads is a critical success factor for a lot of businesses. Okay, so moving on, a couple of other new things that are important in the Web2 application server space. Web2 application server is now embracing feature packs. And we have an open beta going on for the application server feature packs for SOA, and it's planned to start in December. These feature packs are free. They're optionally installable product extensions that offer incremental features on top of the existing WAS release, which the existing WAS release now is 6.1. So the feature pack for SOA leverages some Apache Tuscany open source technology to provide implementations of things like SCA, the Service Component Architecture, and SDO, which is Service Data Object Specifications, in addition to some generic stuff like Data Access Service that supports SDO, so some of the supporting technologies. So this feature pack is designed to really increase programmer productivity by enabling you or helping you to not get too bogged down in the individual complexities of the technologies that connect, you know, service consumers and service providers. So, you know, kind of the fundamental core pieces of your SOA. And in addition, it helps you to improve your flexibility and your ability to adapt your applications to whatever might be going on in your business environment. And as such, right, you know, service data objects, SCA, SDO, designed really to help you reuse. So the open beta is designed to start in December, but it could potentially move out. So this is something that, you know, we're planning on it in fourth quarter, late fourth quarter, potentially early first quarter, depending on what happens with the availability of it. Okay, let's move on then. The next slide is our feature pack for web services. So in addition to the SOA feature pack, we also have a feature pack coming out for web services, which is primarily designed by web services. It is a communications type of protocol designed especially to help you reuse your applications via web services. So the feature pack then extends the core capabilities, right? Web2 Application Server already has a very robust web services stack. And so some of these additional capabilities that we're looking, you know, to deliver via this feature pack is the ability to asynchronously transact or asynchronously relate to other vendors, as well as, you know, reliability, security, interoperability in general. And, you know, the service packs are designed to make things easier to implement, a way of reducing some of the complexity of already a very robust product, streamline it. So when you need these features, you can go grab them as opposed to just getting them by default. Okay, so next slide then highlights what's a critical product for us. The WebSphere Service Registry and Repository is a very critical product. As folks adopt towards SOAs, what they're going to find is they're going to have thousands, possibly tens of thousands, possibly hundreds of thousands of unique services in their infrastructure. And managing those, you know, opens the door to a potential nightmare. So WebSphere Service Registry and Repository is ultimately designed to provide you that infrastructure. So we talked earlier about WSAA and building a blueprint. Well, WSRR becomes that repository or that blueprint or that, you know, map, you know, all that existing metadata and service information that's going to be critical in order to make sure that you're able to reuse the right services at the right time. So this really creates a management infrastructure that's going to be a critical success factor. Okay, so the next slide is another customer story. And this is Insurance Services Office, or ISO, which is far easier to say. And ISO is built out of Jersey City. And for over 30 years, ISO has been a leading provider of data analytics and decision-making support to the insurance industry. And so when you get a quote, you can thank ISO for your quote. They understand the risks involved with insuring folks, and they're able to assess and provide good, solid, integrity-driven information back into our insurance businesses. So within a year, ISO gathers approximately 1.9 billion records. And at any time, they have some 11 billion records on file, which are essential for their calculations. So accessing that large volume of data, the critical piece that you need at any one time, could easily be difficult. And ISO originally began with a distributed environment, one of our competitors. And, you know, what happened was, first off, this particular competitor sort of redefined proprietary type of an environment, not really built so much on open standards, and they would redefine things, which would force ISO, every time they redefined, to, in fact, recreate or recompile their existing applications, and it was costing them a fortune to basically rebuild applications that were no longer compatible with back-level applications. And so what they had, given they already, you know, were strongly invested in their mainframe assets, again, 30 years, a long time, you build up that type of volume of information over 30 years, you're bound to have a lot of dependencies on your mainframe. And what they found was they were just spending a fortune to run this middleware off their platform. They were spending a fortune because of the very nature of the environment that they had, but they were spending a fortune because what they really needed was something that was built on open standards that was dependable and secure. As I mentioned earlier, right, they already had a mainframe in-house. They already had strong needs to access that data and that critical information. And what they found when they really started looking and revisiting SOA is that, you know, the best strategy for their future development was Java. And, you know, their best deployment platform for their Java actually became Wasm ZOS. Wasm ZOS allowed ISO to centralize their Java-based applications on the mainframe, easily able to access the information that was critically residing on the mainframe. And also, they were able to open this up, and it was very compatible with their business partners, their other vendors. You know, it's built on open standards. So Wasm ZOS really provided a strong, robust, open-based solution, and the mainframe provided the best platform for that. And they found, again, we mentioned earlier Z-Series Application Assist Processors. ISO found that by deploying Z-Series Application Assist Processors, they were actually able to cut the cost of running on the mainframe by approximately $3 million a year. Now, again, we mentioned that cost is competitive on the mainframe as is. You bring in the ZAPs, and suddenly the cost, it becomes a no-brainer, right? This is the best place to run a lot of your Java-based workloads. Okay, so the next slide is WebSphere Extended Deployment. And, you know, a couple of key things to focus on here. You know, WebSphere Extended Deployment is actually starting to enjoy a strong uptake in the environment. And a lot of our customers are actually looking, particularly our SystemZ customers, are looking to extended deployment, in particular for their batch capabilities. So extended deployment brings to the table a series of enterprise-class features that have, you know, there's no doubt as to their value. Things like continuous application availability and the ability to monitor and maintain multiple versions of applications. Right? Version control is something that is strong need for and hasn't been a strong feature to support it. Well, that's an enterprise-class feature that's delivered in WebSphere extended deployment. Other things are the ability to route work really effectively. I mean, most schemas use kind of a round-robin type of routing approach, which, you know, has worked in a lot of cases, but not nearly as effectively. And so what we find is that WebSphere's on-demand router, when deployed in a systems-y infrastructure, actually enables very advanced edge of sysplex routing capabilities that tie back into the ability then of the system to do workload management, right, to ZOS WLM. So there's strong tie there. But predominantly, customers have grasped onto the batch capabilities, and they're finding that the batch capabilities enable them to do their existing workloads so much more effectively. And we actually have an example on the following slide of reuse in action. So we have a large banking customer in Europe who had a business problem, right? They had a kernel-based application, an application that really was needed by a series of other applications, right? It was a core module to doing business in their infrastructure, including some of their batch-type work, and they needed the ability to grab that and asynchronously run with it in a batch environment. And they were able to solve this problem by bringing in WebSphere extended deployment. On ZOS, they had over 70 applications that were actually running in WebSphere application server, and they were able to use WebSphere extended deployment on ZOS as well to leverage those existing applications as well as to leverage the ability to centralize and manage that within a batch environment. By deploying this to ZOS, they were able to ensure that it shared those characteristics that are critical, like availability, security, scalability, and data integrity. And some additional values of deploying here is that, you know, they were able to process much faster because of the batch capabilities that extended deployment brings to the table. And they were also able to better utilize their existing applications. So they were able to, by centralizing and sharing, right, we all know Z is a notoriously good sharing, you know, it shares very well. You know, they were able to utilize better their existing applications. So there wasn't the idle application waiting for something else to complete so that it could start up again. But additionally, a core part of their batch was the ability to recover midstream. So if you could set checkpoints within your batch environments to say this is a fail-safe, right, and this checkpoint here, in the event that I don't complete this full batch job, I don't start back at the beginning, I start back midway through the records at whatever that checkpoint was. So this became a really good solution for this company. Next slide. So we talked a lot about middleware. We didn't focus so much on the value of Z within that middleware. And I think that's normally the case. I think a lot of companies, you know, they decide on, okay, WebSphere is the answer for me, and that's great. And then the deployment option comes up. Well, where am I going to put my WebSphere? And so, you know, your middleware and your SOA as part of that, right, your core middleware that is actually supporting a lot of those SOA principles and really driving SOA into reality depends on, right, where you build your SOA. The platform that you decide is this critical part of my SOA will reside here versus here, so on Intel versus System Z, you know, you make decisions at that point in time that actually then impact your SOA and the viability of your SOA and the manageability of it and the virtualization and all of these things that are critical, right? You know, how I manage this environment is very much impacted by a platform decision. So what we find is if you look at what are the values, right, what do you get when you deploy? What does the platform bring to the table? And when you start looking at deploying on System Z, you're gaining enterprise class qualities all across the board. So things like the disaster recovery, right, and isolation, and the ability within a parallel sysplex or a GDPS, a geographically dispersed parallel sysplex, the ability to recover entire systems across thousands of miles, critical success factor, right? I think some of our recent disasters, whether they're weather-related or human-related, really indicate to us that, you know what, when really bad things happen, it impacts a lot of people, and how quickly we're able to recover from those situations and those really bad catastrophic events, you know, your platform matters. Your platform can really impact whether you can or cannot recover and how long it may take you, because an hour could mean life or death for some people. Being able to come back up within a matter of minutes is critical for a lot of companies. So just thinking about the platform decision and just looking at what it is that each platform does really well and what it's going to bring to your table in terms of sophistication and capability, does your business need this? Is this accessible? Becomes the question. Otherwise, your SOA can in fact run anywhere and, you know, you'll find yourself sinking money into it and people cost to manage it when it doesn't grow or scale or do things that you really need it to do. So the next slide. So WebSphere Application Server is actually one of the largest deployed G2E platforms, and it's been a market leader for quite some time now. So when you deploy there, why would you deploy there? The vision and the qualities that WebSphere Application Server brings to the table, particularly on Z, where it's able to integrate and tightly communicate with the platform, it becomes an obvious choice. An offer that I would like to put out there is we have a great book, Secrets of SOA, on the next slide. Secrets of SOA is a book that was written for, you know, executives and IT professionals, and it was written by IT professionals and IBM senior technical staff members. So it was written by IBM and our customers, some of our core customers. And it discusses things like, you know, what are the business implications of doing some of these things? And it addresses them on an enterprise level, right? It does not talk about an SOA project, something you do in a vacuum. It talks, in fact, about decisions that you make within your enterprise that impact your entire enterprise. So making a bad IT decision can really, you know, have strong, lasting impacts. And that's what this book is designed to really talk about is, you know, let's not narrow the scope. Let's, in fact, take it at what it's worth, at a broad scope, and look at all these unique things, both from a business perspective and from an IT perspective. And this book brings to the table those skills to write that. Okay, I am actually now done. So if there are questions, we can take them.
Thank you very much, Andrea. We'd now like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Now, for our first question, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. Or if it was low, press star 3. And we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone the chance to respond. Moving on, question 2. Was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. Or if it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. And once again, we'll pause for just a moment. Moving to question three. Are you currently running WebSphere application server on the mainframe? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. If you don't know, press star 3. And we'll pause for just another moment. Question 4. Is your IT organization planning an SOA project? If yes, within 1 year, press star 1. If yes, but more than 1 year out, press star 2. Or if no, press star 3. And we'll be right back. Question 5. We hope you've enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you're interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. That does conclude our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad at any time. And once again, that is star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. And while we wait, I'll turn things back to Andrea.
Thank you. So are there any questions or...
There appear to be no questions at this time. However, I would like to remind everyone that's star 1 if you do have a question. And we do have a question from Mike Wakefield of Marriott International.
Okay.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Where does data power, or how does data power play into this discussion in the SOA space?
Okay. So data power, for those of you that might not be familiar with it, is an SOA appliance. It has strong XML strengths in doing XML work, and also provides some security depending on how you're actually implementing it in your infrastructure. And I would say on the mainframe, there's a really good potential. XML is very CPU intensive, and there's a certain amount of XML parsing and stuff that's offloadable to a Zap engine, but an even greater amount of that can be offloaded to data power. So I see data power is actually really providing you a nice customizable option for your SOA. So if you find yourself doing a lot of XML intensive work, data power certainly is a really viable and strong option.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We do have a question from Alex Nubla with HealthNet.
Okay.
Yes, Andrea. My question is, within the ZOS SOA environment, have you worked with some sort of an ESB, Enterprise Service Bus, that way it can channel through a lot of the services out in the enterprise?
Okay, so can you repeat that question? Have I worked with customers that are building enterprise service buses?
That has, for example, we have a TIBCO ESB here.
Mm-hmm.
Would that work with ZOS in terms of SOA environment?
Okay, I see.
Done something similar.
Yeah, no, I'm not entirely sure the compatibility of your specific TIBCO product with ZOS, although I would say probably it would work. I know IBM offers a number of products to help you build an ESB depending on what your needs are. We have a WebSphere ESB product that's really designed to do open standards types connections, so like kind of Java to Java environments. It's very standards based, it's very open, so it's really built on open standards. Then we also have, but in for a lot of our particular mainframe customers, there's a lot of folks where that really isn't going to quite be sturdy enough and do all of the provide all of the true enterprise service buff qualities that folks are looking for. And a lot of our mainframe customers already have strong investments in WebSphere MQ, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. And MQ, actually, there's a complementary product to MQ called Message Broker, WebSphere Message Broker, which really we've kind of said is more of an advanced ESB along the lines of it provides you know, the ability to not only use open standards and to connect open standards, but it links back into proprietary type technologies, and it does all sorts of mediations, and, you know, it's really kind of able to handle a superset of what could be thrown at an ESB, you know, the WebSphere ESB product.
So your solution would be better off that we stick with some sort of a message broker for our transport protocol rather than going with some sort of an enterprise service bus?
I think using WebSphere MQ and message broker, you've ultimately created an enterprise service bus. It's definitely robust and does all of the things that, you know, an ESB per se would do. So, you know, I think that where it becomes a little confusing for folks is there are choices, right? It's not like there's only one product or only one way to do this. There's really not. There's a lot of different ways to do it. And for folks with a strong MQ investment, I would certainly say looking to message broker will give you everything that you need for, you know, forever. That's my hope, right? That you'd never need anything else again.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Just a quick reminder, that is star one if you do have any questions or comments. And there appear to be no further questions at this point. I'll turn it back to you, Andrea.
Great. Well, I just want to thank everybody for joining me today. And if you have any questions or want to do some follow-up, I can be reached by email. And my email address is agrego, that's A-G-R-E-G-G-O, at us.ibm.com. And I would be glad to take any, you know, any of your emails. So thank you.
That does conclude this conference call. Thank you all for joining us, and have a wonderful day.